Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB Steve Toom visited the lords and ladies of the Siouxland Renaissance Festival in southeast South Dakota. He wrote about it on the South Dakota Public Broadcasting Living blog, which you can find online at sdpb.org. He joins me now in the studios in Vermilion. Hey, Steve.
Hello. How are you today?
Off having more fun. We talked to you last time about SuperCon, and now it's RenFest.
Yes, from the future now to the past is where I'm traveling here this summer with the events that I'm going to. Play in the Past, that is the theme for the Siouxland Renaissance Festival. They had their 16th annual festival on June 10th and 11th up at the Sioux Empire Fairgrounds in Sioux Falls. Normally in the past, they've been on the first weekend in June, but they've had a scheduling conflict, so they moved it back a little later than what they normally do to the second weekend in June.
All right, so take me to the fairgrounds and tell me what it's like as a visitor. You don't have to be dressed up to come.
No,
you can experience the village in some ways.
Yes, yes. And one of the things you have to do, and I've been going to this festival, as I mentioned in my blog, just about every year it's been in existence. So the older you get, you have to think a little more, you know, when you go there, okay, you know, what's the weather going to be like? Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be rainy? So you got to make sure you wear the right clothing. If it's in June, obviously, you know, sunscreen, you know, make sure you wear a hat. Otherwise, you're going to get sunburned. And yes, I did see some people getting a little fried like a French fry around there because, you know, they didn't plan in advance. So that's always a good thing to do is watch your weather forecast and make sure, you know, that you're ready for anything weather-wise, because this is South Dakota, and if you don't like the weather, wait about 10 minutes.
Is this an organization, one group that sort of puts on the event? Do people come from across the region?
Yeah, it's a nonprofit organization. Okay. They contact various performers and vendors. And some of the people that are at the fair, some have been there for many years. There's always some new people that show up as far as, you know, musical acts, or they have a display, or they're, you know, one of the knights in the that perform in the joust. There's a lot of different things going on. 1575, Shrewsbury, England, that was kind of the theme for it this particular year. But the interesting thing about the Renaissance Festival is that you have people in costume there. I mean, you have everybody from grandpas and grandmas down to little kids, and there's always some stuff to do there, and there's always things you can learn about the past. And in our modern society, we're on the go, go, go all the time. We sometimes forget of how things used to be. And, you know, it's like, boy, it took a lot of manual labor to do the things we take for granted now, like cooking food, washing clothes, and just taking care of the basic fundamentals. Some of that stuff has gone over. And then there's plenty of fun stuff to do, too.
Right. 1575. Put that in context for me. What's sort of happening in England in 1575?
17th year, I believe, of Queen Elizabeth's reign.
Okay.
And, you know, they have people there dressed as lords and ladies of the court, and they try to be accurate as far as what the clothing styles were like for those who were participating in the court. And there's also a lot of things, you know, where people dress in costumes sometimes as a specific person, and they will research that individual, or whether it's a man or a woman, to find out, you know, what their mannerisms were like and their attitudes. And then you could also, there's plenty of people there just as common laborers or craftsmen, too, and they're out there having fun as well.
All right, let's meet some of these folks. We've got some clips, and the first one, the Ale Group, Don Woods. These are Vikings.
Yes.
Ah, tell me a little bit before we hear.
Olskapan, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. They're a relatively new group. They're out of Des Moines, Iowa, and they've done research on Viking history and what it would have been like to have been a Viking in medieval times.
We could like to consider them the first recyclers. They would not have let anything go to waste. Everything that they worked on, they worked hard on, that they never wanted to waste anything. So they would land in a new area. They would actually dismantle their ships, take their plankings off their ships, and use those, the nine boards that they would pull off, to build a A-frame tent. They would have set these A-frame tents up lengthwise and then taken their sails and draped them over across these A-frame tents. It made it very efficient, very quick to move it across land. Then the main hull of the ship, they would have actually dragged across land if it was a small enough of a ship. Then when they find the next water source, they would just rebuild their ship and continue on down the rivers.
And how long does it take to set up one of these replica tents?
Honestly, it takes us about 20 minutes to 30 minutes to set one up.
That's actually pretty quick considering how complex these things look as you walk by them.
Yes, honestly, they're just pegged together. There's a peg at each end. We use just a regular 2x6, but they would have used their oars that would have had small holes in them that they would have drove a small wooden peg in to hold them together. The tarps themselves, we just wrap them up underneath and stake them into the ground as the Vikings would have done.
Fascinating stuff. We're talking to Steve Toom. He's visited with folks from the Siouxland Renaissance Festival earlier in the month.
Yeah, it's surprising because those tents actually look quite sturdy.
Right.
And considering they take only, you know, less than a half an hour to set up, you never would have thought that when you walked by and took a look at them.
All right, let's hear some music or talk about music. Hammered dulcimer player Kathy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to talk about the instrument.
Well, the hammer dulcimer is a beautiful stringed instrument that has been around since actually the court of King Nebuchadnezzar would be the first time it's written in the book of Daniel chapter 5. And it says he had a dulcimer in his entourage, and it would have been about a third of the size of the one that I'm playing. And it would have been a marching instrument with a leather strap around your shoulders, and then you bang on it. And there are some really beautiful ancient pictures of men with tall kind of ziggurat kind of hats banging on dulcimers. That would not have been the same metal strings that I'm using now, but by the Renaissance, they would have switched to metal strings. The metal string instrument that I'm playing on, we could also argue, came first out of the Middle East. In the time of the Crusades is when it came over into England. Now, the Crusaders were clever enough to see a beautiful instrument and snag it and ride back home to England with it, but they weren't quite clever enough to grab a player or a tuner or anyone who knew what they were doing. So by the time we come into the 1600s and 1700s, the dulcimers, by 1610, it will be written up as untunable and inadmissible at court. So as we codify Western music in the future, the codification of that music is dependent upon the instrument being able to express the intention of the composer. So if you are Bach, you're not going to write for hammer dulcimer, because you might get something as lovely as this one next to me, or you might get something that really is untunable and unplayable. So it was left behind in Western music, but in Eastern music, so in India, it is a major voice in a classical ensemble.
So Steve, you alluded earlier to this go-go-go society and taking a step back. Do you find that the folks you talk to, that is part of what really appealed to them, is this sort of, very old school way
of
living?
It's a love of history,
at
yes.
least for a little while.
Yeah, it's a love of history, and it's a fascinating part of history. And I'm not the biggest musical history expert, but just talking to some of the people who play, the various instruments. Okay, no electronic stuff, obviously.
Right.
And how did they do things back then? And the hammer dulcimer again was one of those instruments, as you heard Kathy refer to it. It was brought back in the Crusades, but unfortunately, they didn't bring anybody back who knew how to fix it and tune it, and that's a big problem. And so it kind of got left by the wayside. And it is a beautiful instrument. And on the blog, I do have a recording of Kathy actually playing a song on there. And it's a very, very beautiful. It's very versatile, too, when you watch her play it. She strikes the strings at certain places, and I'm watching her play this. As goes, how does she know how to strike that particular point to get that particular note? I had piano lessons when I was a kid. I used to play guitar a little bit. I know a little something about this, and I was just fascinated just watching her play it.
All right, let's meet the queen. Who is this? This is Carrie
Von Drack.
She's a Queen Elizabeth I impersonator.
Now, there's also a lot of etiquette of the day that you had to study up on, because in past times, there were some ways certain things were done, not just in court, but in society in general. And during the course of that research, what's a little factoid or trivia that you came across that you found amusing or astonishing, in your humble opinion?
A factoid that I found astonishing. Nothing comes to mind, but as far as nuances of the time, actually, my husband is portraying Robert Dudley, and he does have a hard time remembering reverence to the Queen. And how do you properly reverence the Queen, Dudley? I just wonder this.
Well, I can't show you today with the radio, but you put your best foot forward, and you bend at the knees, show a little flourish. And hopefully the Queen will tell you to rise you up and accept it.
And would you ever turn your back to the Queen? Would you ever turn your back to the Queen?
No, you should never turn your back to the Queen. Something that I have mistakenly done many times.
Don't mess with the queen.
No.
Even
Carrie,
if you're married to her.
Carrie is actually from Lincoln, Nebraska, so the British accent is one she practices. It's not how she actually speaks. She stayed in character kind of during the whole part of that interview, and, right. and just talking with some of the people, they really do the research on the character. And again, with the, you know, this is medieval times. It's the feudal system. You had nobility. And the way we, you know, that people acted in the society back then is that, you know, you had your lords and ladies. They were your betters. You had to defer to them. You had to show them the proper reverence, even if you were just passing them in the street. And, you know, that's something that, you know, in our society where, you know, every, you know, right. we, you know, in the United States, you know, it's something it's hard to think about. It's like you had to bow and flourish and curtsy and all that. Yeah. Just went, yeah, that's how
the,
things were done.
The stuff of revolutions.
Yes, and never turn your back on the king or queen, ever, ever, ever.
All right, let's meet Melissa Arleth with Cirque du Sewer, which involves rats.
Well, I call it Cirque du Sewer, like Cirque du Soleil, only less Canadian. We've got trained performing rats. I've got a trained performing house cat. I walk on a slack rope because I'm trained too, and I have a musician that's almost housebroken.
Now, how long does it take to train one of the animals for your events?
Well, rats only live about 2 to 3 years, so it takes maybe 9 months to get the rat doing all of the tricks that you'll see in the show. And after that, I get maybe a year out of them, and then they're ready to retire. They get a little bit of arthritis in their hips, or they're just a little more tired than they used to be. So they spend their last month sitting on a little rat-sized beach chair and eating almonds.
I have seen this act.
Yes, you have.
I have seen the Cirque du Sewer. The rats will crawl. I mean, she's on a slack rope, which is not a tight rope. It's slack, but she's mm-hmm. doing some acrobatics there.
Yeah.
And the rats are crawling all over her and eating almonds out of her.
Yeah, out of her hand. Yeah, she has a little obstacle course set up for them where they have to kind of go up little ladders and down ramps and all that. And it's a funny, humorous show. And the kids love that one because, you know, and it was especially funny to see all the young little boys and girls who wanted to see, you know, the trained rat, you know, scurrying all over and going through this obstacle course. And Melissa herself, she is a trained acrobat. So she does like walking the tightrope and does the splits and all that. And the little rats will crawl over her, you know, from arm to arm and, you know, to get from one part of the maze to the other. It's a fun act. I've seen it, and she's just a sweet person to talk to.
Right. Now, when I saw her, there was a bit of a tragedy, and one of the rats took off.
Uh-oh.
It was not her fault. There was a distraction, and one of the rats went and hid, and she had to retrieve her rat. And so she cares very deeply about her rat. Some people care about her rats less. Did you see the cat? That's new.
I didn't see the house cat. And obviously, they probably have separate dressing rooms.
We're talking with Steve Toom about Siouxland Renaissance Festival. And Steve, we've got just a couple minutes left. Some of the other folks that we're not going to hear from today, but who are on the blog, include storytellers. Were the fairies there this time? Sometimes the fairies are there.
I did not see the fairies. Of course, they had the new Riders of the Golden Age. One of the biggest attractions is the joust, where they actually have armored knights on horseback, you know, doing the joust. They'll fight with swords on horseback. And those guys train pretty well, and they always put on a really good show. It's always very, very popular.
I cannot watch the joust.
Can't?
Stresses me out far too much. It looks... At least it looks very real, and I think it looks fairly violent. I'm assuming that they fall off the horse and they're acting.
It is a choreographed show. The horses are trained, so when they take a fall, you know, it's I don't want to give it away like pro wrestling or anything like that,
right.
But I mean, they do have a show that they do. They're not out there to hurt each other for real. That's why they have the protective plates where they do the joust, so that way when that lance shatters, it's shattering on a piece of armor, not on a piece of them.
Yeah, I really can't watch that. I'm all in. I believe everything that they're doing, so it's a little too stressful for me.
Well, did you see the one year? They didn't do it this year, but a guy actually stood on top of his horse on the saddle and did a backwards somersault on the other guy. Kind of, yeah. I mean, some of those guys, so they do go through a lot of training, and those suits of armor, by the way, are real, and they're very heavy, and they take like at least a half an hour to get into out of.
It's summer. Go out and find a festival near you. Have some fun, Steve Toom. Keep going out and finding these fun sort of nerdy things for us to follow up with.
I'll be in Rapid City this weekend for SODAC Con, and there's also an SCA event out there I plan on hitting.
Excellent. And you can find photos, videos on the blog, on the SDPB Living blog.